This episode of The Next Step is brought to you by Fremantle Press and the book How to Avoid a Happy Life, written by Julia Lawrenson. Here's Julia talking about the book.
My name is Julia Lawrenson, and my memoir is called How to Avoid a Happy Life. Some people are born into bad situations, some people have bad situations thrust upon them, and some people find bad situations through their own dodgy choices, lack of information, and personal idiosyncrasies. I took a bit from columns A, B, and C just to make sure I wasn't missing out on any of the anguish going around. The chapters include be born into intergenerational misery, marry your ex-girlfriend's brother, find out why your husband is urinating in the kitchen of an evening, and find yourself and your new partner being chased down the street by a phalanx of reporters. In How to Avoid a Happy Life, I try to show that resilience is not inborn, but learned. How to Avoid a Happy Life is published by Fremantle Press and is out now.
Welcome to The Next Step. The next step is figuratively, but also literally in this case, what happens after the first time. It's about figuring out what to do next in life, specifically how to manage the push-pull between ambition and contentment. Like, what do you have to do to achieve the things you want, and how can you be happy if you achieve nothing? Sometimes I wonder, would I be better off spending my time setting goals and making lists or meditating? Perhaps I should do a vision board. How do people make money and grow successful multi-million dollar businesses? Like, what are the actual steps? And are ice baths the answer to everything? I'm Catherine Collette, and this is The Next Step. This podcast was recorded and produced on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri and Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures. You've probably heard of Sarah Pound before. You may also have cooked her food. Sarah shares easy weeknight recipes at Wholesome by Sarah on Instagram, where she has nearly 700,000 followers and a bit of a cult following. You can also get Sarah's meal kits in Woolworths around Australia. Sarah has recently released her first cookbook, also called Wholesome by Sarah. When pre-orders of the book were first announced, it became the number one best-selling book on Amazon Australia. It stayed in the number one spot for more than a week. It also went through multiple reprints before it was even released. Pretty incredible achievement. And we get to talk to her today. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, Catherine. Oh, it is weird hearing your bio. A little snippet. Very excited to be here.
Sarah, your first cookbook has just come out. You've got a really massive following on Instagram, as I just mentioned. You've built a really huge community of people around your recipes. You've got meal kits. You've had a catering company. It's fair to say you do a lot in the cooking space. You know cooking pretty well. What are your earliest memories of learning to cook?
Earliest memories? It's hard. Like, when I think about this, because I've been asked this a little bit over the last sort of year or two, it's not like I have memories that stand out in my mind. I just remember having a genuine sort of interest for cooking as a young child. So I was one of five kids. My mum was a stay-at-home mum. She cooked dinner every single night of the week. And I remember having an interest in that and always wanting to get up. It's actually funny, my second daughter does it now. She's only three. But wanting to get up on the kitchen bench and watch, wanting to get up on the kitchen bench and get involved in some way. And that's sort of my earliest memories of kind of having an interest in it. And, you know, lots of people say, oh, but most kids kind of love to do that. And, yeah, a lot of the time they do, but I think it's watching it. I remember doing it over a number of years, and I've noticed that with my Penelope is that she'll kind of say, Mummy, can I get up? Can I get up? And, you know, a lot of the time parents sort of say, oh, no, you can't help, that's hot, or no, you can't help, that's a sharp knife or whatever, whereas I'm sort of like get her involved as much as possible. You just obviously watch her and whatever. Whereas my eldest is just sitting over on the chair watching, like just doesn't care at all. And you don't know where that's going to go. Who knows, you know, Lil might decide she loves cooking later in life and Penny might flip and, you know, do something totally different. But that's my earliest memories of you know, as a young child showing interest in cooking, just wanting to be there, wanting to see it, wanting to be involved with mum, wanting to help make dinner. Then, you know, as I got older, I wanted to, a night a week, I wanted to make dinner for the seven of us and that kind of thing. So I think it probably started from there of, whereas my four other siblings didn't do that. Like my brother, my older brother's a very good cook, but yeah, there wasn't that sort of interest in wanting to get involved.
I love that. I would also love if one of my kids was offering to cook dinner once
a week. It would
be
helpful.
Oh, my God. Can we cultivate that? I love that you mentioned your mum because you ended up opening a catering business called 2 Pounds, brilliant business name, yeah, with your mum. And during COVID, that catering business closed. Tell us about that time in your life.
Yeah, gosh. It's funny thinking back on that time because, I mean, now it seems – well, it seems like so long ago, but it also seems totally fine because, you know, Wholesome by Sarah was built during COVID towards the end of it when I pretty much, you know, 2 Pounds had gone to the gutter. But it's fine to think about it now. But during it was extremely stressful. It was sort of 2 years of, I still remember the date. It was March 14th, 2020. We had this big engagement party in the city I was driving back for. It was like 150 people and the father rung me on the day while I was driving back, you know, staff were booked, everything was, you know, food was bought, we were on the way there and he said, oh, look, I'm going to have to cancel it because of this COVID stuff that's going around. We don't know what it is yet and it seems quite serious. And it was all of a sudden, like from that moment, everything kind of just changed. Mm-hmm. And also it changed so many. Hospitality was very badly affected, but so was so many other industries. Mm-hmm. And so from then it was pretty much a stop, start the entire time. And I remember people saying, even mostly close people trying to make me feel okay, saying, oh, you know, this will pass. It'll be really short lived. You'll be back up and running within a couple of weeks, you know. And something I remember thinking, nah. This is different. It's not, there's just something about this that's not going to change in a number of weeks. We're not going to be back up, you know, running events for 150, 200 people in a matter of weeks. So it kind of just went to survival mode pretty quickly. We kind of continued to run our, we were often, you know, the first people with restrictions, we were the first to kind of be shut down and then the last to open, a lot like the arts. I remember hearing that they, you know, all concerts, all of that always got cancelled. And a big part of the catering business was private home catering and that never came back pretty much in the whole 2 years. So we kind of had to pivot and we did our take home meals for the year of 2020. I was also pregnant with Penny at that stage. So it was really stressful. It was sort of, it was the unknown. You didn't know, you couldn't plan, you couldn't develop anything business-wise. And I'm a big planner. I love goal setting and being able to achieve goals. You couldn't do any of that. I tried to stay calm because I was pregnant. So I was just a bit like, I don't need the added, you know, stress running through my body at that time. My husband was phenomenal during that time, but we sort of kept afloat by doing our take-home meals for the year of 2020. And then sort of when we came to a close of 2020, we had a major, the restrictions all kicked back in once 2021 started. And we just couldn't run the take-home meals anymore. They were barely keeping us afloat. I loved being able to employ my staff and have them on JobKeeper and give them an income. But in terms of the business and the survival of it, we just, everyone was amazing during that time. The silver lining was that you saw how much support you could get from people through a really tough time. And I didn't mind about being vulnerable. So I'd get on my socials every week, often, you know, bawling my eyes out saying, you know, we've got a new menu out. If anyone wants to order, we'd love it. And the amount of people that would just then place an order. And that was really a wonderful, positive thing to get you through as well. But then the second year we kind of just shut because we couldn't manage with the take-home meals and it was just, yeah, the increasing debt. My landlord at the time was actually wonderful, but you still had increasing debt from that. You had different things that you couldn't pay. So it was just debt building up in the background as well. So it was just a time of worry and stress and you couldn't do anything. It was completely out of your control. It was the unknown, and you kind of just had to sit with it, which was a bit bizarre.
Absolutely. Out of that experience, you ended up creating Wholesome by Sarah. Is there a particular moment that you attribute the very beginning of Wholesome by Sarah to?
It was sort of halfway through the second year of COVID. So it was about July 2021. I still remember sitting up in our living room here with my husband thinking, I've got to do something. I just have to do something. I'm going out of my brain. Like by that time, Penny was 7, 8 months old. So we kind of got through the newborn stage, and that's when we kind of thought to share recipes. Like I love talking out my ideas with my husband. His name's Tom, but he's very good at kind of listening to me, basically. And he was sort of like, yep, just do it. Start sharing your recipes. And that was going to be on my Instagram page. I had a following of about 10,000 people on that. So I didn't start my Wholesome by Sarah page initially, like in the beginning. I sort of thought, I need to do something to keep me going. I need to get in the zone of my flow and stop worrying about when on earth we're going to open up and I'm going to be able to run events again. So I'm going to film my recipes. At the time, Instagram Reels were just starting. And I think that was probably what was cool. Tom and I saw that. We kind of saw that it was going to be a big thing and it was going to probably explode. So we thought, you know, why don't you film your recipes, put them on Instagram in this new reel format and see how they go. So I sort of went out, bought a professional camera, a DSLR, which I had never touched one in my life. But I thought, hey, I've got time. I can't run a business, so I can watch YouTube videos and learn how to use this camera, which I did. And then I started posting recipes on my actual catering page before I'd started my Wholesome page. And I did 30 days, like a series of 30 days of recipes, and it was amazing the feedback I got from them. That was sort of the first moment of I'd put them out and the comments and, oh, my gosh, I made this last night. It was so easy and it was so delicious. And I sort of thought, oh, this is really lovely. Like it's actually helping people. You know, people are seeing these videos and liking them and going off and cooking them in their own kitchens. And I'm getting enjoyment out of it, which at the time was really lovely because I hadn't work-wise for a long time. And so that's when the whole idea started. I knew there was something there because of the positive feedback I'd received. So I sort of then was starting to think about Wholesome. And I sort of said it to Tom and my sister Liz. I said, I think I want to start an Instagram account, a separate business, and start sharing my recipes. And they thought I was mad because we're about to finally open back up after nearly 2 years. You know, everyone had almost got vaccinated and I had a backlog of about 6 to 8 months of events that were all booked in week by week. And they sort of said, you know, you've got a lot on your plate when everything opens up in November. And I sort of said, I know, but if I don't do this now, I'm actually never going to do it. Like, I can feel that I'm loving it and I can feel that there's something there. So I have to pursue it. So I did start my Wholesome page in November. I posted a few random videos here and there, no structure, no kind of plan. And then everything opened up and we did get smashed. We got like every week with events. It was really crazy. We sort of had 2-3 weddings a week. And so I didn't touch the Wholesome page for about 2 months and then regularly started posting on that in February 2021. And that's when it sort of started to grow from there.
And so what did regularly look like in the beginning? Was it a daily posting?
Yeah, I remember sort of thinking over the January, if I don't give this a crack, if I don't have a proper plan for it, if I don't give it time, nothing's going to happen with it. So I then made a promise to myself to commit to doing 5 reels a week around a theme, and that's how I started. So it was either, you know, 5 days of soup, a bit like series are going nuts at the moment on Instagram. It was like that. I'd sort of do 5 days of soups or 5 days of 15-minute meals or five days of one pan meals, and started doing that from February. And I still remember the moment that I was just out shopping one day in Woolies and my phone just started going bananas and it was going bing, 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 bing. And I sort of thought, what on earth is that? And I pulled it out and it was my first reel that had started to go viral. And it was just a lunch mix. It was like a 5-ingredient lunch mix about day 3 of it or whatever. And I'd never seen that happen before. And Reels have allowed that to happen on Instagram, that you can just grow, you know, something can go viral to people that don't follow you. And so I just sort of was standing in Woolworths watching my phone. It was going ding, ding, and the views were going up and up and up. And I sort of thought, this is so weird. Like, I don't know what's really happening here. And then from there, it kind of snowballed. It was like, and that was a great, I mean, it's cool. You know, people say, that's so cool, you got a viral reel, which it was, but it was also really cool because you could see where you could grow and you could see that, okay, cool, if I put out something that people like and that, it, you know, starts to trend, then it can go bananas and therefore more people are exposed to your page and to what Wholesome by Sarah is about. So it just started to sort of really grow from that February 2021.
And did you analyse particular elements of Reels or content to, did there sort of emerge a formula around what seemed to resonate more with people?
Sometimes, God, it's a bit of a beast. You don't know. I mean, people ask me this a lot because I have, you know, being someone that's experienced quick growth in a short amount of time, there's definitely elements like it, but I would say that most people would know this. It's sort of, you know, how to grab someone's attention in 3 seconds. In that first 3 seconds, which is why I always show my end result of my meal in that 3 seconds. So that's something I'll always do. I'll show the finished product to sort of try and capture, you know, people go, oh, that looks yum. I want to stay here and watch, you know, how she cooks that. It'll be, you know, people will say it's trending music, it's you know, under 30 seconds. And I've never found, and it's forever changing. So you don't, anytime I think that you find, you know, people say it's hashtags, it's over 20 hashtags, it's under 10 hashtags this month. It's forever. Nobody really knows. All I kind of try to focus on is what my audience likes. And I realize that, you know, within those months of growing, that they wanted easy, approachable, not necessarily family friendly, because I have lots of people that follow me that don't have children, but something that they feel like they can cook themselves in their own home and it's not too intimidating. I think the way that you film, so moving around, things like that help because it keeps people's interest. I think, yeah, not the shorter the video, the better, but maybe, you know, nothing over a minute, nothing too lengthy. Only really show what you have to show, because you're always going to give the recipe or you're always going to explain how to do it, you know. Yeah, those sorts of things. But at the end of the day, it is really hard to know why some go bananas. And sometimes I'll spend all this time on certain ones and think, oh, yeah, I think this, everyone's going to love this one, and it gets very few views. And then other times I'll spend 2 bloody minutes and barely plan something and throw it together, put it out there, and it'll hit 3 million views. And you think, oh, my gosh, like I didn't even. So it's hard to kind of work out why some go the way that they do and some don't.
That's so interesting. I think it's also just something very soothing about watching people cook. I know sometimes I just watch recipes I have no intention of ever making. There's just this, like, you know, it reveals what happens. It's very pleasing and satisfying. Is that something you think about at all in the creation of content, this group of people that will never make?
Yeah, definitely. And the amount of people that say to me, oh, my gosh, I love your recipes. I have like 60 saved, but I haven't ever made one. So they'll think, oh, that looks great and I can probably do that and whatever, I'll save it. But, you know, getting around to actually doing it and whatever in all our busy lives, it does get tricky. Definitely, I think there's an element to that. I feel like, God, mine is, I definitely don't think Wholesome's a page that's aesthetically, I think my food looks yummy, and I think that's always what I have in mind when I create recipes, is like, I want people to love this. I want to love it. If it tastes like crap, no one's going to eat it. But I don't think my page and my videos are necessarily aesthetically pleasing or, you know, I can't think of the word, when you watch people's videos and they've got the sound on and it's all the mixing and the pouring, and it's sort of like draws you into kind of, you know, into a trance of watching it. I often say, I wish I could do that, but I'm often filming with my two daughters in the room. And honestly, if the sound was on, you'd just hear my Penny screaming the entire time, you know, not necessarily crying, but yelling, mommy, mommy, look at this, look at this, look at this. So I definitely don't have that kind of knack for pulling people in, but I think there is something about, making, and, you know, a reason that I show the finished dish at the start is to try and get people enticed by what I'm actually cooking for sure and how it looks.
You are also in your videos.
Yeah.
And you are very much the face of Wholesome by Sarah. There is an element of vulnerability in that. What was that like in the beginning? Is that something that you had to grow a confidence around, or did it come very naturally from the start?
It's an annoying answer, but I didn't have to build confidence for that. It's been who I am for a long time. You ask any of my girlfriends, my long-term girlfriends, you know, that I've been very close with since the age of 10, and they'll say she was always born for the stage, or she was always LA girl, they call me. I'm like, I never made it in acting at all. but I don't want that to come across dicky, because it's just the way that I was. I always loved the camera. I always felt confident in front of the camera. I think people, not necessarily born with it, but I just think that never bothered me. And I look at my daughter, my three-year-old's probably too young to tell at the moment, but even my nearly seven-year-old, and she's so camera shy. She's so often doesn't want to be in my videos, and I think, yep, that's fine, you don't have to be. And she says, no, I don't want to be filmed. I go, no, no problem. But you can tell there's a difference there, because I remember, and I know people have told me that I knew that when I was 7 years old, I loved the camera. So I was the person that was there trying to bloody steal the show, which is quite embarrassing. But, you know, Mum used to say we lived in Hawthorne and we knew a whole lot of our neighbours. I would have 20 children from down the street in our house, and I'd be like trying to produce a play to the Sound of Music or to something, and I'd have everyone lined up, but I was the main star of the show.
Of course, you had to be.
Like, oh, my God, yeah. Director and also the main, anyway. And I'd sort of be there singing and dancing and orchestrating everyone and getting them into place and ordering them around, and it was just who I was from a very young age. And that's not to say I didn't have moments of – I was very lucky to go to a wonderful secondary school, and their drama department was amazing, and I really wanted to pursue that. But, you know, in year 10, I remember getting 100 out of 100 for my monologue, and I was so proud. But then I chickened out in continuing to do drama in year 11 and year 12, because I just thought it was when sort of alternative drama styles had started to come to the surface, and I sort of looked at all the people around me that were going on to continue to do drama, and they were all wonderfully different. And I just thought, I am just like a Hollywood actor that wants to make it in LA, so I wouldn't be able to give anything different. And that started to freak me out a lot, so much so that I dropped drama. So it's not to say I've always got full confidence in, you know, anything in front of the camera or whatever. And I actually don't regret that decision, because I think acting is such a hard industry to sort of, you know, go into and be good at and, you know, have a crack at it and be successful. But it's, I think as you get older, you also get more comfortable in your own skin. So, you know, this whole Wholesome stuff and everything I do now in front of camera and everything is now that I'm, you know, I've just turned 37, I'm a lot older. So I have more life experience. I have a different kind of confidence that if it doesn't work out, it's okay. That's very different to being, you know, 16 years old and going up against everyone else.
It's also, I think, that those skills, you know, the skills that we have, we don't necessarily know how they'll play out in life, but you've managed to combine these two loves of kind of a front of camera thing and a food thing. You found a way to make that work.
Yeah, which is actually the coolest part, I think. And I think about that quite a bit out of COVID. You know, Wholesome was born, and it is such a, I without sounding really corny, I kind of wake up most days and think about how happy I am or how content I am in the place I am right now with work. I loved the catering company and it taught me so much over 8 to 10 years of running a business, employing staff. You know, hospitality is not an easy industry. Having kids alongside all that, it sort of, it pushed me a lot to, you know, limits all the time, and I managed, and you know, you fail and you learn and then you grow, and so I'm not at all, I don't regret doing any of that. I think it actually makes you the person that you are, and I think I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now if I didn't have that kind of under my belt and all that experience. But that's what's really cool about now, is that I say it to my husband quite regularly. I'm like, I'm just so happy with where I am at the moment. Like, it's just, it's like I was meant to be here, but it takes time for some people, or it takes something like COVID or different situations to sort of get you into it. And yeah, the fact that I get to combine my passion for cooking, but also with my, you know, love of being on camera and presenting and doing all that sort of stuff, it's really like a dream come true, and it's pretty, pretty cool to be doing each day.
The preface to your cookbook is super interesting. In it, you say you're a feminist at heart, and you make two comments that stood out to me. One is, sometimes I wish my passion didn't correlate so much with traditional gender roles, but then I remind myself the kitchen is where I feel most creative and inspired. And the other is that it's worth noting that women undoubtedly carry the majority of the burden when it comes to supervision of children and unpaid work, including preparing and cooking meals. I have never read a cookbook that mentions gender before. Why was it important to you to include this?
Oh, God. I'm like, oh, God, this could be a podcast episode in itself. How much time have you got, Catherine?
You've got all the time.
This is a that's the other thing that I'm extremely passionate about, women and I know right now what I'm doing work-wise is where I'm meant to be and what I love to do, but I also know in time I will definitely work in this area in some form of sort of trying to help women put themselves first and find their passion and try to pursue that in whatever way they can. I think it's important because it's in my DNA, and I often think about, where did this feminist streak start with me? Like, it's sort of, I never had, I mean, you know, I grew up in a family, 5 kids, dad was the breadwinner, mum was a stay-at-home mum, and I think it probably has started from there, seeing sort of a sacrifice mum gave to, you know, 5 children, being at home with them every single day. And yes, that was a lot more normal 40 years ago. That's what many, many women did. But I feel like, you know, come 40 years later, we're here now, and there's just so much pressure on women to do it all. And, you know, so it's not only the stay-at-home mum now that looks after the children and pretty much runs the whole household, then, and not always, but now they're expected to work as well, and or they need to work because, you know, everything costs so much bloody money these days. But it's sort of this, but nothing shifting. So all this stuff just gets kept being put on the female, and they're just expected to roll with it. So I just, like, 98% of my followers are female. And so it just shows you, like, they're doing all the cooking, and it's not always the way. I'm always very quick to say it's not like every, we're very fortunate in our house that we, you know, Tom and I are 50-50 parents. We pretty much share our domestic load with washing. Obviously, I do more of the cooking, which would make sense. But, you know, everything else split in our house, it's pretty much even. And it's the way I think I always would have been, and the way I would have always strived to have in a partner that they, but I also understand that that's not achievable in every household. It's so hard to, and I've thought about this for hours and hours and hours on end about how to help, how to fix it, how to help women, you know, put themselves first so that they can follow their passion. And share the load in the household and share the load. And it's just, there's just no easy answer. And that's the massive challenge of it all. So I think it's important to note, because I want to try and it's just a conversation starter, and I don't know where I am with it yet because I don't know how to help the situation yet. But I even say to lots of people, every household looks different. So you can't do a one size fits all answer for everyone, but it's sort of, it might start with a simple conversation that a female has with her partner about, okay, I'm doing a lot here. Like, I'm working 3 days a week, which often means you're working four, or if you're working 4 days a week, it often means you're working full-time anyway. I hear that from so many women. But then somehow they're doing everything with the children, running them around to school activities, thinking about all of the school stuff, the forms, the excursions, everything that goes into that. Then they get home and they're covering everything in the home, from cooking the meals, from doing the washing, from everything that's managed in the household. The mental load for them is just so big. So it for me, I often say, just start with a simple conversation with your partner about, like, ways you can help me in the home. And, The Imperfects, which is a podcast I love, they once did an episode on having a deck of cards that has all the jobs in the household. And it might be to do, if you've got pets, if you've, whatever, they literally list 300 jobs. And you pick out the ones that are relevant for you and your household. And you can even do this before children, because it's actually really, I think it's quite a healthy conversation to have with your partner before you have children, because then you sort of see where you both sit. But you kind of work out how you can help each other and how you can support one another to carry out those roles within the home. And I just don't think that happens. And I think it always falls on the female. And I just think they're just, it's why so many of them are exhausted, and they have passions of their own and they want things that they want to try and do, but it's so hard for them to do that because they've got all of this other stuff that's, kind of blocking them and limiting them from doing that. So I don't even know if I've answered your question.
You have. I really like the card approach.
Yeah.
I guess a way of thinking about it is both that it's about sharing a load, but also valuing the load if the load can't be shared, and acknowledging the labor in the load.
Yes. And I think that's what I often think about. I think there's lots of, again, I'm definitely generalizing, but I think there's a lot of male partners out there that just assume the female will do it, and they act like they're useless at the task or they don't know how to do it. And it's like, when you strip it all back, don't you just want to help out the person that you love, like help them manage stuff a little bit better and not have them feeling exhausted and like they never get to fill their cup up, and they always have this, never-ending to-do list of household jobs and, career jobs if they're working as well, but they don't ever get to, even think about what they might love to do or their passions. And I often think about that with my mum. Like, she, and this sometimes gets me a little bit emotional, but she could have been wonderful at so many career paths. I see it in her, I see her personality in the way she's a doer, she's organized, she, I don't think she'd ever regret, well, I hope she doesn't regret having us five children at home all the time. And there are many, many women out there that is their dream job. And I think good on you, that's incredible. For me, I could never solely do it. I think I need work to kind of keep me, I don't know. I just think being at home with kids is so, so hard all the time. So I take my hat off to women that do that and love to do it, because I think what an incredible role to do. But I do think about that with my mum and so many women of that time, of like what they might have missed out on if they got the choice to put themselves first. So it's just about a conversation and trying to help the partner out to line the load. And I think if you do delegate, as boring and as, nerdy as it sounds, but then it does create this like, okay, cool, that's your role, that can be taken off my hands now. And there are ways to do it, that even if a male gets home at 6 o'clock at night and he's been at the office, there are ways that they can do things after hours when they're watching their show or whatever, if they're folding some washing or they're making some lunch boxes while watching their show or whatever it is, chatting with their kids up at dinner while they make the lunch boxes. Like, there are ways that you can divvy it up that is fairer, I think.
Sarah, I want to come back to this moment that we've mentioned a few times already about your business closing in COVID, the catering business. Again, going back to the preface to the cookbook, you said that you said about this time in relation to the stress and the worry and all the rest of it, that you realised you had no control over this situation. I interviewed an author recently about stoicism, and a lot of what we talked about was this idea of the things you can control and the things you can't control. So I wondered, in arriving at this thought that you had no control over what was happening, how did you come to that? Was it an outside source that pointed you to that? Was it the end note of despair? How did you arrive at that?
Yeah, I feel like, I think probably COVID definitely highlighted that element for me, but I probably think that before COVID had come about, I was a little bit like that anyway. Mm-hmm. That I've always been a person that, you know, probably more career-wise, but you see, you know, you think about something that you might want to do, and both my husband and I, we're just doers. So we will put things in place to try and make it happen. And that's a really, I love that trait, because it's pretty cool to be able to, you know, some might call it manifesting, some might call it, you know, deep planning and hard work, whatever it is, but to kind of visualize something that you want and then, you know, work really hard to achieve it, I think is one of the coolest things you can do. And so that in itself is the ability to control something. So you have an idea, or you have a want, or you have a wish, and you go, okay, yeah, I think I'm going to work really hard. And it could be in any aspect of your life. It might be in health and fitness, you know, I want to be able to run a marathon, I want to be able to do that, or might be in career, it might be in parenting, whatever it is. And it's pretty cool to be able to put things in place to then be able to achieve it. And I think it's obvious when, you know, when things are out of your control, you can't actually do anything to try and get there. And so when that used to happen, I've never been a person that sort of worries or sits on something for ages. It's sort of like, okay, what can you do about it? Can you do something about it right now? And if the answer is yes, cool. What is that? What are those options? Let's look at them. Let's possibly do them. No, I can't really do anything about it right now. Okay, so let's either let it go or park that for a little bit until something in that situation changes, whatever that may be. And the thing about COVID was is that you literally could not do anything. Like it was like this really bang smash thing in your face about, I really wanted to go and keep going with events and getting the kitchen and get planning, and but we physically weren't allowed to. So it was sort of, and it's not to say it didn't come with despair. There were so many days of tears and stress and worry and, you know, talking about it with my husband for hours on end. But at the end of the day, there was actually nothing we could do about it. So it was this sort of highlighting moment of, if I can't do that, then I want to do something else. And that's sort of how Wholesome started, because I was so fed up with not being able to do what I wanted to do and kind of get in there and achieve what I wanted to achieve, that's just what sort of forced me to pivot, really. And Wholesome was great because, you know, not that I knew it was Wholesome at the time, but it was something that I could do, that I could focus on, that I could say, cool, I'm going to do 30 recipes. So I'm going to film 30 recipes. I'm going to put them up each day and just see how it goes. And it was something that I could focus on, that I could control, that brought me joy, and that, yeah, what, you know, in the long run was really cool because it started something really, really special. So I don't know how you learn that. I don't know. Maybe, I mean, running your own business for 10 years as well, pretty much you get lots of different situations thrown at you. So, and some are, you know, out of your control and in your control. But it's also something I try to teach my girls as well. When they sort of worry about something, or, you know, they're upset about something, it is that simple language of like, okay, well, can we do anything about this right now? No. So we have to wait for the weekend. So why don't we put it on the side for now? Let's try not to worry about it, and we'll talk about it on the weekend, or we'll see how the weekend goes. And just getting that kind of language going with them to sort of, I don't know, allow them to perhaps learn how to think about situations in that regard is what I try to do.
I like that. Sarah, we are towards the end of the interview. I've got a couple of quick questions for you. The first one is, what is the best thing you've purchased for under $100 in the last 6 months?
Probably, this is not food related at all, but probably my pregnancy belt.
Oh.
I have shocking back pain and I've got an instability in my pelvis in this third pregnancy, and I can barely, I feel like an 85-year-old woman a lot of the time when I can't walk to the bathroom. So I've got a, yeah, bought a belt on Amazon, and it's saving me at the moment. So
hey, we haven't had that before.
I was about to say, I think you probably thought I was going to say some new knick-knack in the kitchen, yes, some gadget, but no.
That's right. That's right. What does your morning typically look like?
Ooh, it's a bit different at the moment just because I've either been awake with 2 hours of pregnancy insomnia, so sometimes I'm sleeping in till sort of 7:30, 8 a.m., which is not like me at all. Usually I'm up early, come up, make a coffee, get a little bit of work done. We're very, very lucky. Our two girls sleep very well. We usually have to wake them at about 8 a.m. So I'll try and get a little bit. Yes, I know. It's very amazing. I don't take that for granted at all. Do a bit of work, and then it's, yeah, getting the girls up and organised for school and daycare, or dropping them. As I said, my husband and I share that load. So it'll either be, getting them ready and out the door, or drop off at school and then hit the desk, or hit whatever's sort of happening that day.
What is your go-to comfort food?
This is hard. I have lots. comfort food, it's a boring answer, I feel like, but pasta. Mm. I just love a pasta. Like a definitely tomato-based pasta. Love a gnocchi, actually. And I feel like lots of people think gnocchi is boring. I love
gnocchi.
It. Yeah. Just the melt in your mouth with some yummy cheese, whether it's parmesan or burrata or whatever on top. Like, on a cold night, glass of red wine, fire, that's just the best.
Oh, that sounds pretty good right now. Final question. Do you have a favourite quote or mantra?
Oh, I have a couple, actually, but it's a very simple one, but just be yourself. I think that's a really, really important mantra to live by. And I feel like I try to do that, have done that for the last at least decade, maybe more. But I also love what is meant for you will not pass you by. Mm. And I think that's a really, I mean, it's quite fitting with Wholesome as well, but it's like a lovely, and it's funny because I've had that sort of quote in my mind for a long time, and when I've looked it up in, you know, in the past, it sort of it can get a bit of slack, that one, because people say, oh, that's just something for lazy people to feel okay when they're not doing it. And I'm like, oh no, don't spin it like that, because I see it in the other way, that if you're working really hard, which was exactly what Two Pans was like, you, and not so everyone works so, so hard when they've got their own businesses and when they, you know, are an employee, but you work so, so hard towards something, physically, emotionally, there's so many blood, sweat and tears, and so much of the time you can feel like you're never getting anywhere.
Mm.
And you sort of wonder if it'll ever get easier or anything like that. And I love that sort of quote, because it's like, I did that for 10 years where I thought, oh my gosh, is this ever going to be worth it? Like, it's, I didn't have a salary for years. COVID screwed everything for so long, and it all just felt so much, and like it was just not a waste, but sometimes a waste at the time. Like, where is this going to get me? And then the silver lining is something like Wholesome by Sarah happens. And I think about that quote, and it's like, what is meant for you will not pass you by is so true in that scenario, which is just really, really cool. And it sort of gives you a, I mean, I didn't know this at the time because I was stressed the whole time, but it sort of allows you to relax. And I use that now, that I like to try and say yes, yes, yes to everything. And, you know, I'm about to have my third baby, and I'm sort of thinking I'm going to have to turn down a lot of opportunities that might come from the cookbook and things like that. And that doesn't scare me, but I'm a very much a yes person. Like, that could be a great opportunity. And oh my gosh, imagine where that might lead to. So I like to say yes to everything. But then having that quote in my head of what is meant for you will not pass you by, it's like, no, just enjoy this time with your third baby, because you're never going to get it back. And I don't want to have any more children because I don't want to do another pregnancy. But at the same time, if you have to turn down things, there will be other things and, you know, more opportunities in the future that you get to really look forward to as well. So
I think that is a wonderful note to end on. Thank you, Sarah Pound, for your time and your wisdom today.
No worries. No, it's been a pleasure, Catherine. Thank you.
You can find show notes for this episode of The Next Step at catherinecollette.com. You can get in touch via that website or via Instagram at catherinecolletteWriter.